seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is Minute 24. Part man,
part machine,
all pod.
This minute begins with Murphy being rushed to hospital and ends with his wife saying, I really have to tell you something.
Please tell me what it is. Please, please tell me that we've got a guest.
And we're joined for the last time. Well, at least for now.
For this bracket,
I don't know. Maybe we'll come back. I don't know. But Snarl McGowan. Yeah, oh, Bat Minute. I keep going to say Batman 89.
To this day, I'm still like, oh, so this is Batman Returns, I think. Oh, it's forever. We're forever now. And every single time, the transition from Tim Burton to Joel Schumacher has just been a tongue twister every single episode of that show. But yes, hello, it's me. It's me, Niall, from Batman.
If we just say Batman, it's a blanket statement for, you know, from now until the future. Like when you go and do Batman 66 and Batman Begins and Batman.
Yeah.
And the Batman Dark Knight Rising. Doesn't really work.
Batman Minute of the Phantasm, all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that would be great. That's a great film.
That would be good. Yeah.
That's the thing. We did have discussions like, should we do Mask of the Phantasm next? It is a great movie. And I was like, well, I don't know. It might be almost too good to cover. Too well animated. It's like, what would you riff on and stuff?
If we found anything, you can take a great movie like Robocop and still poke the shit out of it.
It's because it's got a bit of goofs in it already. You know, it's already kind of got that sense of humor. Or like the Alien prequels that I do. It's a godsend for Movies by Minute because there's some really smart stuff in there. There's also some incredibly stupid things in there as well. That's the goal. That's the ideal.
I was going to say, the only thing that made me laugh in Mask of Phantasm is the scene where Bruce is in his yard in his jiu-jitsu gear and it just looks so weird and campy.
Yeah.
As a classic, what are you doing? Jiu-jitsu. Gazoon Knight.
Yeah.
The thing was, we were sitting pretty on this, like, oh yeah, we'll do Mask of the Phantasm next. And then a Mask of the Phantasm minute appeared on Twitter.
Ah.
And we were like, what? So, no, I don't think they made any progress since. That was a couple months ago, but we are keeping an eye on these people, like, who the fuck are these guys?
Well, we actually inherited Robocop from Rick Ingham of the Mad Max podcast and the Waterworld podcast. So he was going to do Robocop, had everything all set up, and then pandemic happened and I guess personal issues and what have you. So I said, hey, is anyone doing Robocop? Because I really want to do Robocop. And he went, well, I was, but you know what, you can have it. And he gave me all the Instagram graphics and everything. It's wonderful.
Oh, what's funny is that I did not know about this, and we've been talking about Robocop on Prometheus by Minute, I believe, was when we first started talking Robocop. And then it was just one of the things of like, I looked at the list and went, there's no one doing Robocop. Shall we do this? And how about this? We do Robocop and the remake because I'm a freaking masochist. And I pitched it to you. I said, and we call it 60 Seconds to Comply. And there you go, folks. That's the deep lore.
Genius.
I think that was
so genius.
Once you see that title, it's like, you can't not do the show now. Like, that's it instantly becomes like, the title's too good. You have to see this to completion.
Exactly. I'm kind of disappointed with my Minute 2049. I can't think of any other freaking name for Blade Runner 2049. That's as good as it gets.
That's a good one. But unfortunately, the Blade Runner Minute has to be just called Minute or it just doesn't work.
Anyway. But yeah, this scene in Robocop, I think to me, I find it more terrifying than where Murphy's actually being killed. Because, I don't know, maybe it's just that childhood fear of, I wasn't afraid of injuring myself. My brothers were always injuring themselves, typical boys, freaking smashing their heads open, falling out of trees, whatever. And so we did go to hospital a few times to get their heads glued back together. Not together, but, you know.
Oh, no, that would have been a brilliant movie, like these two boys' heads smushed together and stitched together by science.
Yeah.
It's like the boy with two brains.
Yeah. I was about to say, is this the movie that we were pitching with either Jeffrey Combs or Bruce Campbell or both?
Oh, Combs and Campbell together at last. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah, those two guys' faces just melded into each other.
God.
Is there a Man with Two Brains by Minute podcast now? Did I just magic that into existence?
Yeah, you have. You have to do it now because you thought of it. But yeah, I think just that childhood phobia of to hospital.
Jeffrey Combs
just...
isn't fucking Man with Two Brains.
Ah,
he is.
Fuck yes,
it's
he
been
is
a long
too.
Time. Anyway, getting back on track. Yeah, I think just that powerlessness of having all these people around you and tubes shoving into you, it's just, that's actually worse than the injury itself, I would say. And we see that Murphy's eyes are open, but the pupils are contracted. And, I mean, realistically, that means he isn't brain dead. But I have to wonder, would they have gone to the effort to make his eyes look like they were dilated? Or, I mean, nowadays it's a lot easier to do.
I think this is, well, no, this is Weller himself. This wasn't the dummy or anything like that. You can tell by, you know, he's...
the nostril hair and all
looking
that.
Like a human.
Even today, like the detail on his skin and all that type of stuff is hard to mimic. It's probably more possible now, like with silicons and stuff like that. But back then, yeah, just cheaper and easier. Just get the actor, throw him on a crash cart, go cover him in goo.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, altering his eyes to look dilated so it is showing brain death.
Yeah, like they've probably done something to do that type of stuff. But yeah, it's that definitely was Weller himself on the crash cart. But yeah, this is a great, great scene, and it's brutal, and that's the point.
I think it's 'cause it's also going from like cartoony super violence to like very relatable. Yeah. This seems like this happens every day. People are rushed into ICUs and stuff like this, and people do see.
It gets very real.
Yeah, yeah. So it does.
You know, weirdly, you know, the thing I thought of though is. Friggin' in Harley Quinn where she shoots the guy with the cancer ray, and it's just the most tragically hilarious thing ever, because this has gotten really real now. Oh, this is quite...
We're laughing our asses off.
Yeah. Oh,
damn it.
Because it's so real, because it's just like, oh, wow, they're going there.
Yeah.
They're really going there.
Yeah.
You can't half-ass these things. If you're going to do it, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Whole loss it.
Oh god, I forgot about the cats. just to completely ruin the tone, but one of the things I love about this is the cinematography. Oh, it's all the crash cart stuff is closed in. You're either getting the POV of Murphy as he's being subjected to all this, and that is kind of torturous, especially someone who literally cannot move and has to deal with this. And the other shots are close up of Murphy, and it's intercut with what we assume are the flashbacks. Well, they are flashbacks.
His life is flashing before his eyes.
I'm going to cut a little bit early to the commentary, but this is one of the scenes where Verhoeven talks about it has the ultimate expression of leaving life. And he later says, losing everything that was there, your wife and your children. And he always felt that this was an extremely tragic scene. And quite rightly so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Again, the thing I've read from within the novelization as well is like they have a thing where I think in this scene they talk about Murphy's dad was killed by a stray bullet. And he has a memory of like, was he lay on the floor and just said like, son of a bitch or something as he was, and he kind of had a smile on his face as he was dying. And it's supposed to be stuff about like, Murphy now remembering his father's own death and understanding the feeling of like, why it's almost kind of funny as you're going out and stuff. And
so this is chapter 7 of the novelization, and it's all first person. And it's like, it crosses over between the death of Murphy and the birth of RoboCop, which in a really good way.
But also, we do get, of course, a flash of TJ Laser himself. And I'm devastated to discover no credited actor on whoever did that the gun twirl didn't get the credit for it.
I have a little bit of a note on that, but go on.
I was thinking that it's always fascinating thinking about those additional minor scenes that they would have had to film, you know, TJ Laser and then... the kid watching TJ Laser, or any of the scenes with the son. It's just, they must have done all that in maybe an hour, and you still have to set it all up, get all the costumes and everything going.
I just imagine, though, like, the guy playing TJ Laser, though, is out, like, going to people, like, you see RoboCop? You know, that guy who twirled the gun? Yeah, that's me. Yeah. No biggie, but yeah, it was me.
I hope he did.
I do have some notes on the credits of this movie. We'll get to that in a tick. But the funny thing is, it looks like not that Ed Neumeier, the writer, is TJ Laser, but it looks like he directed the actual TJ Laser segment. Because Verhoeven makes a little snide remark, because Ed's talking over the scene about how important it all is. It just so happens to cut to the TJ Laser bit, and Verhoeven cheekily says, "Oh yeah, of course you're talking about the TJ Laser bit. You directed it." And it's like, what? So yeah, it looks like Ed directed the TJ Laser segment that's on the TV, but that's not what, of course, he was talking about. But that's probably it.
And then like all the reviews for RoboCop are like, "This film's okay, but those TJ Laser segments, wow! Oh, yeah. Whoever made that, they're going places."
Yeah, Ed Neumeier was robbed of the Oscar that year, damn it.
Yeah. He's just in whenever, was it Jose Padilla, the guy who made the remake, was just like calling Paul Verhoeven for advice. And he's like, don't put in the TJ Laser segment. It'll just steal all your thunder. Believe me, I know. Yeah. Replace it with like a hockey game or something, for the love of God.
So in the original script, there's some added stuff where it's actually going further back into Murphy's past. So it's him, there's a scene, of course none of this was filmed or anything like that, it was cut, where he was underwater and he breaks the surface and his mom is spying down upon him, and then cuts to something else, and then finally cuts to a, quote, pretty girl filled with youth and hope, runs and jumps in and kisses him. That pretty girl evolves into wife, stands with our son.
Hmm.
And that's the comment I was going to bring up in the credits, because, Murphy's wife is never mentioned by name.
No.
In any of the three movies, she's credited as Ellen Murphy in the second movie. In the novelization, she's given the name Jan.
Ooh.
And the TV series, she was called Nancy, and in the remake, it's Clara.
Yeah.
No explanation is given.
I don't know. Didn't I just a minor check? Does she have a name already? I don't care. just call her whatever. Clara, that'll do.
I mean, I guess this was the days before Wikipedia, so they couldn't just quickly look it up. I wonder how often writers for comic books or Doctor Who or anything like that with a huge continuity, do you think they're just like, oh, quickly, let's look at the wiki and go, oh, yeah, so this character was called this and they appeared in this and this, yeah.
That's probably one of the great things about modern day fandom is that we have things like Wikipedia and Wikia and all the fan wiki sites that people can actually not be disconnected from continuity, but this is where classic discontinuity happens in a lot of stuff, is because there was nothing going on.
Oh my god, the Knight Rider wiki is so weird, because there is no continuity, there is no logic, it's also really badly written, and it's just, it's a great time.
It's only when you get showrunners or writers themselves that keep an internal continuity. I'm going to make this a deliberate job, but that's why, like, someone like, say, Star Trek.
Well, shit. That's exactly what I was hoping to spare you from.
Actually has some pretty decent continuity for the most part.
Oh, yeah. I do love the Memory Alpha. It's very useful. But I think Memory Alpha is probably one of the better wikis, and also the Transformers wiki. It's so funny.
But my favorite bit of discontinuity is DC Comics. So they decided to make a comic series based on all the psychics called the Teen Titans. So it was Robin, Aqualad, Speedy, and Kid Flash. But they wanted a female psychic, but there's no female psychics. And someone said, well, doesn't Wonder Woman have a female psychic? She was in that comic once. Oh, we'll add her in. We'll call her Wonder Girl. Yeah. Problem is, that wasn't the psychic, that was Wonder Woman as a girl.
I didn't know that.
Something or other.
That is literally the secret origin of... They invented Wonder Girl because they thought that was Wonder Woman's psychic, even though she appeared in one comic and it was just Wonder Woman as a girl. And that they had to try and explain in continuity later the actual origin story of Donna Troy. I'm not making a single word of that up. That exactly is what happened.
Wonderful.
Not in-universe, obviously.
Mm. At least it's better, though, than like... One of the most frustrating ones for just rewriting continuity all the time is The Simpsons, which I guess you'd be like, well, it's a cartoon. Yeah. But then The Simpsons, what it worked at its best is like there was always an internal logic to things. Like there was a hierarchy of people in Springfield. Like, you know, Krusty the Clown wouldn't know who Jimbo Jones is until later seasons where, everybody just knows who everybody is and stuff. And like, you as a fan are sitting watching it, and it's just like blatant rewriting of continuity all the time. You're like, do you people even watch your own show? Don't you know? You've got things set in stone, but I guess things are set in stone sometimes until we need them to be something else. It's just it's forgivable when the show is good, but when the show turns bad, it's like, oh, this is just salt on the wound, for Christ's sake.
My favorite Simpsons gag on that is the one where Flanders and Homer become friends, and in-universe Lisa and Bart are shit scared because they're realizing, holy crap, if this continues, that's going to be like, you know, the end of the show. Like, the show's just completely ruined. And then, like, right at the end, it's like, shut up, Flanders. Oh, back to normal.
Yeah. I think, yeah, 1 week later, it's like, oh, my auntie just died, and we got her house. The thing is, they say it's haunted. It's just like instantly back into the stupidest storyline you can think of.
And they also occasionally acknowledge the fact that, hey, we've been kids forever. Like, we don't grow up. Yeah, that's kind of weird. But that's terrifying.
Sometimes, though, on occasion, like they will do ones where, like, yeah, somehow Mr. Burns is just hanging out with people on the street. Like Mr. Burns would never do this. But then you do get the occasional episode where it'll be like, you know, Flanders blowing up at everyone, and he's just like, oh, I don't know you, but you're a jerk. And it's just Lenny standing there, like, and you're like, yeah, to be fair, Flanders should have no idea who Lenny is, but he's just like, he's a random man in his house. Like, Lenny knows Homer. He doesn't know any of these other characters, because why would he? But
I would love an episode of The Simpsons.
Canonically, Bart and Lisa were like born in the 80s, because they make a David Hasselhoff joke from Knight Rider.
You look like crap.
Fuck you, kid! Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But they have the one, like, the whole thing with the B-sharps, and then there was a more recent episode where, like, they did Marge and Homer got together in the early 90s, and Homer was in a grunge band, and it's just like, this is just, like,
that's
you're just throwing all of
Homer
in the other window now, for Christ's sake. This makes no sense.
Oh, my God. I would like an episode where, it could be like a Treehouse of Horror, where one of the characters becomes aware that they're in this kind of Truman Show type situation, and all the weird continuity problems, and oh my god, I've been in the second grade my whole life.
That would be good.
That would be actually, that's a good pitch. You should, like, that would be one, like, of unsolicited, like, fan mail, just be like, yes, for the love of god, please take this idea and run.
I should send it to them, yeah. But yeah, going back to RoboCop, so the minute ends with his wife, she's in her bedroom, she springs up and walks towards him and says, I really have to tell you something. And I like this one because we see the rest of this much later on. We see the rest of that memory, and so at first she seems quite intense, like there's an argument brewing, and then she says, I have to tell you something, I love you. And yeah, it's just... Let's just put so much thought into this movie.
The thing is, though, I don't know if you... And talking about YouTube essays, are you guys familiar with Maggie Mae Fish?
Who's like we do reference her RoboCop. Yeah,
and she did a really fascinating analysis of RoboCop, where she took it to be like a trans allegory. And that clip was...
Use that as canon.
Yeah, and that was about, like, this been, like... Because the memory changes as it goes on, like, it's obviously a different take. She took it to be, there was a whole, like, you know, I recommend everyone look at, I think it's just literally Maggie Mae Fish RoboCop ! is the video title. But, like, yeah, she did a whole big thing about, like, oh, you know, Murphy really trying to assert his masculinity in these scenes, so he's remembering back to his son, his obsessive memory with his son been into this gun and stuff. And yeah, I really have to tell you something. I love you. And then RoboCop walks through the female form and stuff. And then, like, yeah, it's all a trans allegory. The way he's looking at Murphy, or he's looking at Lewis, who looks almost identical to Murphy, but she's a woman. And it's framed like a mirror and stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, like, weirdly enough, this all tracks. This completely works as a theory. So.
Yeah, they intentionally desexualized Lewis to try and give her a bit more of a matching appearance to Murphy. Like, they cut her hair and all sorts of things. It's even styled the same way. And we've even noticed that, like, Dick Jones and Bob Morton have, like, this kind of same matching style, the power suits and all that type of stuff, and the hairstyle. And God, the design of this movie is phenomenally good. And yeah.
Nancy Allen has just such a girl next door vibe, because I watched Dressed to Kill, and she's a prostitute in that, but you wouldn't know. She's just got such good girl vibes, you know?
I don't know. I still always associate her with Carrie. I was like, that's that asshole from Carrie. Every time I see her, it's like, God damn
it. Oh, yeah, I forgot about
this
that.
This is a real nasty piece of work on that. And I was like, every time I see her, it's like, there she is. I fucking heard that.
I need to watch that. I mean, I'm going through a bit of a Stephen King phase right now. I'm reading Christine, and I watched it recently. Mm-hmm. Love Christine a lot.
You go through it alphabetically. You're already on the C's. You just go, oh, go to oh, no, oh, yeah. Carrie first, though, technically. Carrie, then Christine.
Well, we'll stick around the C-section for a while, if you will.
I'm not sure I want to know about Stephen King and C-sections.
My other note for this minute is, what the hell is a mask trouser? Because I looked at the subtitles, and one of the surgeons says, put on the mask trouser, and I just... Is that what he actually said? Is that just what the subtitles are saying? A Google search revealed nothing.
Let me just go through the script, because I don't have the subtitles on the videos, so let me just check and see if there's anything in the script. Because I've not seen the mask trouser.
That feels like, you know, the saying to the actors, like, yeah, just say stuff. Like, sound like you're busy. It'll be all garbled. No one will be able to hear it. And then eventually someone doing the subtitles heard, mask trouser, it's going in. I'm already typing, okay. It's done.
I should get a screenshot of the subtitle.
As I did point out in the last minute, this was a real crash team in a real hospital, so it was what they're doing, so maybe it's a real thing.
So they should know what they're saying.
What I love in the novelization is, because it is through Murphy's POV, is that it's all him expositing what's happening to him, but he's also losing his memory to the point where in this one part it's almost tragic, where it's like sliding doors bang open and close, tubes are being stuck into him, tendrils, he's a squid now, liquid bubbling nearby, whoops, he's underwater now, he swims for the surface frantically, mom is waiting for him, keep your head above water, you're going to be alright, damn straight he was, after all he was whoever, he could remember that one, his name would come to him soon, he knew that. He turned and hit the school bully in the face. A little girl gave him a kiss. He knew her. It was Jan. A little person. There's Jan again. Older. She looks beautiful in her white dress. Man and wife. His wife. Who was he, though? Garbled memory. Love it!
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you've got $100, pick up this novelization.
Well, I'm hoping... Let's see. Maybe I'll the Batman at Patreon money. I might see if I can funnel that into a RoboCop novelization. But if you buy that one, you got to buy the novelization of part two, and that's even more expensive.
Wow. Yeah, if you can somehow hunt down the PDF, please share it, because I'm sure Courtney would love to get a copy.
The guy I know who gets... somehow just has access to PDFs of novelization said he can get to his source on Monday. So if I get it, I'll send it straight to Courtney. But,
no
worries.
One thing, I don't think the novelization will get into this, but like I was fascinated in the flashback to the Murphy kid watching TJ Laser, the decor of the Murphy household.
Yes.
What is going on in this house? Like, he's sitting on a table with the flowers behind him, which I guess you could forgive. I was like, well, kids do that, I guess, technically. But then so he's like, yeah, the truck lowering the floor, two chairs, neither of them facing the TV. The TV's just willy-nilly stuck in front of a window where you're just going to be backlit the whole goddamn time. And next to that is this hideous, giant, golden antelope. I kind of want the Murphy house tour that RoboCop himself takes later on, I guess. Where maybe he's going, that's right, my hideous gold antelope was over here, and the goddamn kid kept leaving his toys over here, and actually, no, I don't miss my family anymore. I remember how hideous the decorator my wife was.
This is like one of those things where it's just like the 80s future. Oh, God, yes. Oh, sorry, I'm bringing it up now, and sorry, my brain just looked to the big Tonka truck, and my brain went to Knight Rider. Of course it is.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was looking really close going, is it an Optimus Prime toy?
Oh shit, what are we going to do now?
No, is it the Knight Rider convoy? No, it's...
So glad you brought it up, because I keep meaning to talk about this. But yeah, look on the comics, it's got like a ROM Space Knight, which was done by Marvel at the time.
I think this... Oh, I might have to look at this in HD, because I think that's a Judge Dredd comic right there as well. There's another one I can't see. I don't have the pixels. I need to get out of the HD.
That would be a good call, though, to have then Judge Dredd for in a RoboCop movie, because it is like, well, yeah. Totally. I guess it is going for that same level of harsh, bitter satire. So...
Is that actually a fireplace? I'm trying to figure it out. But the black tile, that's a fireplace, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's just that old 80s.
So
like,
80s.
The roll-in set for the TV is just like, nowadays, this would be, no one would have
that. Oh,
it's
my God.
There's nothing on it. There's no decorations except for the plant to put on top of it. It just looks like, it looks as if that TV, it doesn't fit the table to put it on. It looks like, it could actually be, maybe they've wheeled this in or something.
Yeah, and the clamshell couch.
Maybe he's actually at school and they're just wheeling it in for a rainy day.
It has that vibe about it.
Do they not normally have a TV? Yeah.
Maybe it is. It's like, you've been good today. The Murphy family don't usually watch TV, but it's only on special occasions they have to wheel out the TV. And so that's why you can see the wire going to the wall. No one designs their house where all the wires are exposed anymore. Like, for Christ's sake, Murphys, get your stuff together. But... but yeah, it does. It has a side vibe of like, yeah, this is like a special, like, this would never normally be here. Because why would you put a TV in that corner of the room and this rickety little table that barely fits into and doesn't look like it could even sustain the weight for the thing for too long?
And facing the window, so all the light from the window is behind the TV. That doesn't. Why would you do that?
Yeah, it's a terrible. It looks like as well. Like that's French doors almost as well. So can you open them up and walk outside? Or like, but you have to climb around the TV every time you do that. That's a terrible, that's a hideous, terrible place to put that goddamn set.
So one of them is, yeah. So one, there is one door there. So why would you? This whole configuration is terrible.
Hmm. You know why? It was designed by OCP.
I'll say no more.
It's the blackness of the table. The fact that it's like, you know, set decorators now would be like, you have to put like a game console there or books or something. But this really does like, nothing about RoboCop is lazy to me, but this maybe will be the one bit where they're like, yeah, this will only be like a 5-second shot. You don't need to do all that much for this.
Yeah. Yeah, we're ruining it.
Unless Paul Verhoeven's like, Ed, you let me down there, asshole. Oh, you're boasting about your TJ Laser twirly gun business. But where the hell was the Sega console underneath the TV? It makes no sense that you put a TV there. Everyone's going to laugh at this movie now.
The movie's ruined. That's it, Ray. Fun to get everything. Unkill RoboCop.
Could that be the one superior element to the RoboCop remake? It's like, well, the house looked like it's a house that people might live in.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go that far.
This actually looks like this was a house for rent, and they're just like, yeah, we'll just go shoot there for the day. And they're like, oh, we don't have a TV. I'll just wheel one in. It's like they literally threw this together in like 5 seconds.
It wouldn't surprise me, though. It honestly wouldn't. This wasn't a big budget film, you know. I'm just imagining, just like, yeah, we have no budget left. Let's just get the cheapest TV. And that's the thing. It looks like a cheap TV.
Yeah, it really
does.
It looks like it's about to go. Like, it's so precariously placed too. You can see like the rungs of the side, which you use to push the TV. It's balanced on top of those.
It's not like the set is only ever seen so briefly. I mean, RoboCop does come back and walk around the place, although it's not decorated at that point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Bob Morton's place is well decorated. That looks pretty cool and realistic.
Yeah.
That looks futuristic, but that's also like, you know, it's an executive. Yeah.
Although the Murphy's bedroom is also straight, like, I think that almost adds into...
I love the bedroom. That's fun.
Maggie Mayfish contends that this originally was a fight, and then Murphy Raylon recontextualizes it as being, I have something to tell you. I love you. But the way the pictures are... It does look as if they've had a massive blowout fight with the pictures half hanging off the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
But then it's just like, no, I think that's just the way the pictures hung. It's they decided to hang it. It's like, oh, it's the future. People hang their pictures as if they're about to fall off the wall now.
Yeah, don't you?
Only accidentally. It's only because I don't have a level.
Leveler. Yeah.
You know what it is? It's predicting that all the houses in the future are going to be rentals and they can't put up permanent hooks because, like, you would damage the walls.
it's predicting the horror that is, like, modern day.
I have framed pictures on my walls and I'm renting, so there we go. Luxury.
Okay, so I've got the scene up on HD, like proper HD, not my bullshit HD. And yeah, one of them is Conan, one of them is Rom Space Knight, and the other two I just can't see. Like, I think it could be Death's Head, but it looks like an independent comic. Just a bit weird. So yeah, we need 4K. Paul Verhoeven, we know you're a fan, we know you're listening to this, so give us a 4K copy and we can truly... we could truly analyze this.
Rom Space Knight looks cool.
I'd love to get those comics and read them because they're apparently phenomenally good. There was talk about doing a Rom Space Knight live action a few years ago, but I think it fell through.
Well, you know what? Marvel's doing everything now. If there is a freaking Guardians of the Galaxy movie, it's got to be Rom Space Knight at some point.
Well, here's the problem. It's Rom isn't owned by Marvel. Marvel did the comics production run, but I believe Rom is owned by Hasbro.
Oh, well, you know. Well, Disney's going to buy Hasbro any moment. Oh, actually, no. As of December 2015, it was announced that a live-action film version of Rom was in development by Allspark Pictures by Paramount. Allspark.
Yeah, it was going to be part of the Hasbro extended universe with, like, you know, G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Which could have been cool. Honestly, like, those franchises, it all could have worked. Optimus Prime with G.I. Joe and freaking Rom Space. I am down for this, but they keep fucking it up.
Can we get to Michael Bay?
Keep Michael Bay away.
I rewatched the first G.I. Joe movie quite recently, just I was just like stuck in a situation. I was like, this is the only thing on. I'll stick with it. And I gotta say, like, it's astounded how much is dated in a mere 10 years.
Oh yeah,
it's like, oh, this is, yeah. But the one thing about it was, it's like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is having a great time.
He was great as, like, Cobra really Commander. Yes, actually, and oh my god, yeah. His costume in the second movie, I thought, oh shit, there might be potential in this, but no, it was like Star Trek Nemesis, where you see Tom Hardy go, oh shit, that costume, oh my god, you're selling me on this, and then you watch it and you go, oh no, it's terrible. I was lured in.
You used me, Skinner. You used me.
I just was like, I don't understand those. It's like, oh yeah, you know, credible actor and whatnot, and then been like offered, like, you get to play the head of Cobra and you can go as big as you want. It's like, yes, 100,000,000%, yes. And it's like, yes, the Joes won't know what hit them. Just swagger around in this quasi Darth Vader outfit. It's like, yes, yes, give it to me.
I was never into G.I. Joe as a kid or anything like, because I grew up in England and I emigrated in 87. So I think Action Force was just coming out in England before I left. So I never got into G.I. Joe at all. But I'm there going, hang on, the only thing I can think of that I know about G.I. Joe, wasn't Christopher Eccleston in
Yes,
that?
He was.
Yeah.
Wasn't he like Destro?
Yeah. Spent the whole movie setting him up as Destro. It's like the origin story of him, and they inject him with nanobites to turn his face to metal. And it's just like, what have you done to me? And all, it's like, yeah. But then the next movie, they have them all sprung from prison. And it's like, Cobra Commander's first port of call is to, like, right, they're all out of prison. He just goes up to Destro and he's like, Destro, you're out of the band. And they just leave him behind. Oh, it's like, the whole first movie, I thought he was the main villain. Why are you just leaving it? Like, we finally got to him being Destro. And then they're like, nah, can't be bothered anymore.
Because Eccleston probably looked at the first movie and went, nope.
I was still sitting and wait for the third movie, finally get the Serpentor. It's like, just to get stupid costume on screen.
Oh, yes.
No, I'm just thinking, maybe he was unavailable because he was filming Dark World.
Oh yeah, actually, that is a possibility.
That might line up, because that was like 2013?
Yeah.
Oh god.
It's just weird though, because, like, Chris Eccleston is the guy, like, infamously walked away from Doctor Who after one season, and just said, like, oh, he's too good for it, and it's like, no, he's doing G.I. Joe and Thor the Dark World. It's like, Chris Eccleston ain't too good for anything.
That's a bit of a bone contention about him leaving, because apparently he was only signed up for one season, and one season only. They were going to regenerate the Doctor.
Oh, okay.
But apparently what happened... Okay, this is all under the allegedly umbrella, is that the BBC threw Eccleston under the bus when basically Doctor Who became big again, which, as a fan, everyone just goes, duh.
Yeah.
And they had to announce what was going on for this next season, and it was like, well, we're not going to have Christopher Eccleston. And then BBC went, oh, yeah, he didn't want to come back because it didn't want to ruin the ending. And apparently that pissed off Eccleston. He wants nothing to do with BBC or Doctor Who. Apparently that's changing. He's apparently coming back for some Big Finish audios.
Oh, okay. I think they're close to that 60th anniversary now, too. So, like, you know, the anniversary, they always love doing a multi-doctor thing. Like, if you can get Eccleston back, you didn't get him back for the last one. So maybe this will be the big get this year.
Yeah, I think that's like 2 years from now is the 60th anniversary. It's on 63, so yeah, about 60.
Although knowing now that apparently the ratings are worse than they were during the Sylvester McCoy era.
Wow. So
it's like, well, let's hope they get to 60, frankly, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see. I noped out after Moffat because that was just getting just too much self-indulgent bullshit.
Yeah, I am permanently traumatized. Can't look at Doctor Who or Sherlock Holmes because of Moffat.
Let's face it, it's also after H-bomb a guy.
The thing was, Doctor Who always was to me, it's just like, even at its best, it was always like a fairly okay show that occasionally, once or twice a season, would have an amazing episode. So I still stick with it, but like, eventually they're going to get to the really good one. But during the Chris Chibnall era, it has yet to have a knockout episode. It's always just been like, it's okay, I guess.
I like, what's his face? I like Graham, and I like Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. The other two companions, I'm kind of just like, whatever. But I must admit, I'd watch those two go off on a space show together.
Hey,
I think that's the thing, yeah.
Guys, do you want to talk about gaslighting RoboCop?
Okay.
Oh, I'm trying to avoid it, damn it!
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
So to answer your question, not particularly, but...
This bit begins with Murphy and Clara holding hands and ends with the most sterile sex scene of all time. So let's just smash through this, shall we? Anyway, so Murphy...
My one note is, geez, even sexy time is dull.
Yeah, the main thing is just, wow, this sex scene is flatter than the color palette. It is so devoid of life and passion.
Oh, God, what the fuck were they thinking?
Thinking about it, the biggest issue is the lack of music. There is no music in this, so yes! It's really awkward.
There's no mood!
So, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with, oh, you know, Murphy's in this really down mood and he's seeking comfort in his wife. Okay, that's fine. But you need to sort of light it differently, have some music going so you really feel what you're supposed to feel, not just, I'm watching Big Brother right now and some of the housemates are getting it on, and it's just too real.
That was the deepest cut you could ever have had.
I still had the real vibe too. Like, I think these two have had a fight or something. So he comes in and is like, oh wait, no, oh, they're about to have sex, they must still be getting on okay. But then even during sex I'm just like, are they happy as a couple? Because it doesn't seem like they are. Like,
they seem like they hate each other, or that they've just met. Yeah. Go either way,
because it's literally the first day of shooting and they're just like, go. Like, they're both...
yeah, it feels like, you know,
hi Joel, this
marriage.
Is Abby, now get your kid off. This is not a porno.
Yeah, it's like an arranged marriage where it's just, yep, this is, I guess we're supposed to, you know, be a married couple now and have sex and whatever, like, so should we,
well, they've already had the kid.
Yeah, no, that was an arranged kid. Well, yeah.
It's an omnicorp plant.
Yeah.
Even that, it's the vibe too, when the car alarm goes off outside, it's almost like George Kennedy was like, oh, thank God. Let's just think, okay, yes. I have to go check it out immediately.
No, ignore it, honey. Let's just... The passion is consuming me, and we can...
I think you bring up something really cool. Well, not really cool, but... this. Okay, so the next minute is the death of Murphy in the remake. I've been waiting to bring this up. We can talk about this next minute in a bit more depth, but I want to bring it up here, because I want to get both of your opinions on this. Next minute is the death in the real movie. The good movie. is literally the Murphy flatlining moment. It's funny how, for all this movie, these two movies that were supposed to have the same creative force behind them in the script, are so functionally different in storytelling, in depth, in characterization, everything. They both die in the exact same minute.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting. Tron Legacy does the same thing where they go to Flynn's arcade in the exact same minute. And there's something nice about that synchronicity there.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more in there, but yeah, having multiple perspectives on this idea, that's, I'm interested.
I think it's just a happy accident. I don't think it's anything more
than
that.
I think it's so too.
Yeah, but I think it's just more like, well, at this point of the story, I guess we get this guy out of here. But
they have to structure it in a certain way.
We've gone in the original movie, we've developed Murphy as a character, we like him as a person, and we've gone through literal 3 minutes of this guy dying to a movie where it's just like, we don't care about this guy, now he's dead.
I am glad that there is a good version of RoboCop, because I think if the remake was the only version of it, I would be tempted to write my own fan fiction fixing it, because I'm that kind of person. I spent most of today, I don't even know where most of today went, because I was writing a fucking Knight Rider fan fiction about Carr and Garth taking over the ARPANET, and I just, why?
Yeah, no, it is a bit of an interesting synchronicity, and I think that's the only time in these two movies where this might actually happen.
We'll see.
Well, we do try and point out the good as much as the bad, even though most of the RoboCop remake is bad.
Every once in a while, there are actually good things. There was a really nice shot with Michael Keaton in his office, and I liked it. So.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe you might get a mirror between, like, when Clarence Boddicker has his great, epic death, and when Michael Keaton just kind of gets shot. And it's the most throwaway. As I was watching, I was like, that's the climax. Are you fucking
I never
joking
remember
me?
The ending of the remake.
It's literally the most throwaway. Like, I could not believe that there's like this is what, this was your denouement. This is like, you were leading all up to that. Fuck you, RoboCop remake.
Well, here's the thing. The remake is actually 20 minutes longer than RoboCop. So the point is, when, like, RoboCop's finished, they're still at the denouement of the end scene of thing. So even before the confrontation with Sellers, I think, the movie's still going when RoboCop has stopped. Like, Dick is dead, Clarence is dead, old guy is just like, good shooting, son, what's your name? All of it! And, like, I can't even tell you what fucking happens in the remake between, like, the last hour of the movie, because it's just nothing just seems to be happening, and then like shootout. I'm spent.
I think that's all my notes. I think definitely delved into this as much as we can.
The only thing, other additional note I had was just the thing I read about the novelization, where apparently there's a scene where they announced that Sylvester Stallone has died and he was having his brain transplanted into a clone body, and I was like, why isn't that in the
yes
movie?
I did bring that
yes
up.
Oh.
It actually, no, the thing is, I actually did the math, and actually that makes this movie set in 2047 because they give a date to Sylvester Stallone's age, which is like 90 something.
Oh, okay, well, there you go. Also, there's mention as well that the Murphys post Alex Murphy's death go to live on a colony on the moon.
The moon, which, yes.
I was like, this is a real, like, that's a real Total Recall kind of thing you got going on there. But like, I never got the vibe.
I was
this
wondering,
movie, that people were moving to the moon.
And I'll say out front, no, we're not doing Total Recall minutes with a Total Recall remake. I might do the Verhoeven's one, and that's it.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, why Paul Verhoeven's, is he sitting there going, like, why are they remaking my stuff, but making it with, like, no fun? Like, taking the life out of it. Like,
We make showgirls cowards.
Yes. I just wish they would remake shit movies.
That's
you
it.
You know, the ones with a good concept, but the movie itself is disappointing. There was one we were talking about the other day, and I can't remember where I went, oh, shit. Yeah, that's... Oh, no. Talking about with another friend. Demon Seed.
Oh, yeah.
Demon now, Seed. Now, that... Yeah, written by... Oh, God, what's that?
You did mention
God.
It.
Oh...
But
yeah,
I've forgotten it. I've not seen that one.
God, I can't remember the author's name, but he's just the worst. But absolute hack writer. It was really written with one hand and one night. It. But the concepts are so freaking interesting. Oh, Dean Koontz, yeah. Who doesn't normally write science fiction, but he's just like, you know what would be really hot, though, if a girl got trapped in a house and the robot impregnated her, and yeah, it's just filthy. But there's some really great concepts, and the movie actually heightened the source material, but it was still schlocky. So I think if you just do another remake on top of that and really delve into those interesting aspects, you could get something interesting out of it.
So I just realized something. So I've not read the movie. I've not seen the movie and I've not read the book, but I have read a parody of the that concept called Demon Load by Rick Gualtieri.
Demon Load. Oh my god.
One of the Authors and Dragons crew, and it's about an artificially intelligent washing machine that gets brought into the house of a Luddite, and he thinks that the washing machine's trying to kill him and replace his body, which it's not. It's just a very helpful AI washing machine. And okay, you guys are probably going to read it, but it ends up basically the AI is just going, are you mentally okay? I'm just going to call a professional and they're going to try to take care of you.
Oh man, I got to read this. It sounds great.
I'll just quickly Google the YouTubes and I'll send you an Amazon. You can get it digital.
Good, good, good.
But yeah, like I'm noted out, particularly on the RoboCop remake, so...
Yeah, so tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Bat Minute, which is available... A podcast where we analyze all the Batman movies 1 minute at a time, and are available on, like, just all your normal podcatchers on YouTube, and you can also join us for discussions on the Bat Minute Listener's Cave, or Bat Minute Battalion, as it, of course, was always called the whole time.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, right from day one.
Yeah.
There's all three seasons where it's a different name.
And yeah, we're on Twitter and we're on Instagram and all that business too. So yeah, we're out there. People should wish to seek us out.
I'm just waiting for your podcast co-host to just go, why the hell is this name suddenly fucking changed? It got better.
Yeah. Yes, you can find me on travandesigns.com, TRAVAN, Patreon, you know, all the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Fandom Crossing, Kung Pao, things, Spotify, YouTube, like, share, subscribe.
Yep.
Once again, I'd like to thank our guest, Niall, for sticking around for 3 minutes of a horrendously terrible film he forced himself to watch without. No, but seriously, dude, it was a pleasure. I'm a new fan to the Bat Minute, so it's also a little bit weird. So yeah, like, oh my god.
thank you for listening. Thank you for having me on. Like, I'm always happy.
This has been weird because it's like, oh, my friend and my other friend, they're talking to each other. Oh, it's amazing.
Bringing people together.
It's like a crossover. Yeah.
It's like a crossover, like when Batman versus the aliens versus Predator versus...
It's like one gif I keep wanting to set. I don't even get it as a gif, but all the lines from Batman versus Superman, the only ones I remember are all from Jesse Eisenberg's...
Save Martha!
But like, him going like, I love it. I love bringing people together. Like, I keep saying that all the time.
Yeah.
And I hated his version of the character, yeah. But as years go past, I'm like, yeah. I think... He's the thing that stuck with me the most. I quote him all the time now.
He's terrible, but quotable.
He seems like he was playing the Riddler, or maybe at best Scarecrow?
Everyone called him the Joker as soon as they saw him.
Yeah, yeah. This is even the fact that he's got the similar haircut to the Heath Ledger Joker as well. It's like, you're not helping yourself, man.
He kind of looks like he's the Gotham, you know, Gotham TV series, Gotham version of Lex Luthor. Because everyone's all pretty and...
Let's be honest, he's a better Joker than Jared Leto.
Oh, should we stop recording?
No, we still haven't done things. Whatever. The end of the episode, say your word.
Oh, yeah, I gotta say, Robocock, yeah, peace out.
Peace out, Robocock. Ooh. Let's go.